WMRA News. I'm Bob Levicky. The director of an assisted living facility in Rockingham County is arrested and charged with neglect. The Virginia Cannabis Control Authority approves a medical marijuana provider for the Shenandoah Valley. And the first day of early voting in Virginia is later this month, and Jeff Shapiro surveys the beginning of the final stretch of campaigning and more in Virginia politics. This is the WMRA Daily for Friday, September 6th. The director of an assisted living facility in Rockingham County has been charged in an ongoing criminal investigation by multiple agencies. The news leader reports that Michelle Buckner, age 64, was arrested Wednesday and charged with felony neglect. Buckner is the director of Willow Estates Assisted Living Facility in Penn Laird. The Virginia Cannabis Control Authority has unanimously approved a medical marijuana provider for the Shenandoah Valley and much of central Virginia. WMRA's Randy B. Hagee reports.
Ayr Virginia, spelled A-Y-R, a subsidiary of the national company Ayr Wellness, was awarded a conditional license on Thursday to become the medical cannabis provider for a broad swath of the state that has gone without one. Health Service Area 1 encompasses Winchester down to Fredericksburg and all the way to the West Virginia line. It's the only region in Virginia that does not currently have medical cannabis dispensaries because the first company that was chosen by the Board of Pharmacy had its license revoked in 2020. That decision got tied up in court until last year.
Medical cannabis patients in HSA 1 have been without a pharmaceutical processor in their region since the inception of Virginia's medical cannabis program.
Jeremy Priest is the acting head of the authority, which was given oversight of the medical cannabis program at the beginning of this year. He presented the staff's recommendation to a quorum of four authority board members on Thursday morning.
And today the board has the opportunity to take another step forward in approving access to medical cannabis for patients in HSA 1.
Priest said 41 applications were submitted for the license, with 33 of them tying with the highest score. Authority staff rated applicants from 0 to 2 in 8 categories, including likelihood of success, cannabis cultivation, and quality control. The winner was chosen from the 33 finalists by a random lottery, pending a background check on the company's owners. Ayr Wellness currently operates dispensaries in Connecticut, Florida, Illinois, Massachusetts, Nevada, New Jersey, Ohio, and Pennsylvania. The authority did not announce a timeline for when their dispensaries might open in Virginia. For WMRA News, I'm Randy B. Hagee.
We've posted more information at WMRA.org and on the app. State health officials are still investigating the cause of an oil-like odor in some Orange County residents' water last month. Dwayne Roadcap is with the Virginia Department of Health. He says three different chemicals could be possible sources of the odor.
We feel like we identified what the cause of the odor is, and now we're trying to figure out what the source of that odor was.
VDH is attempting to learn more about the potential health effects of the pollutants. Health officials say that in laboratory tests of water samples, the contaminants do not seem to cause negative effects over short-term exposure. The agency is also having more water samples from the August contamination event evaluated. In full disclosure, the Virginia Department of Health underwrites programming on WMRA. Commissioner of Elections Susan Beals says she's concerned with the operational performance of the U.S. Postal Service ahead of the 2024 presidential election in Virginia. The Virginia Mercury reports that Beals is warning that mail-in ballots may not be processed in time to be counted. Beals said since before the 2023 election cycle, the Department of Elections has seen issues with mail-in ballots cast by voters who had been living in the same house for decades. The Postal Service has faced significant challenges in delivering mail-in ballots on time since the 2020 presidential election. The surge in mail-in voting due to the COVID-19 pandemic strained the postal system, leading to delays and concerns about the timely counting of votes. Lieutenant Governor Winsome Earle Sears, the first black woman to hold statewide office in Virginia, is also the first Republican to officially enter the 2025 gubernatorial primary race. The Associated Press reports that the Virginia Department of Elections on Wednesday accepted the necessary documents for her run for governor. Earle Sears is a Marine veteran who immigrated to the United States from Jamaica as a child and was part of a Republican sweep of top state offices in 2021. U.S. Representative Abigail Spanberger currently is the only Democrat seeking her party's nomination for governor. Virginia's presidential ballot will be finalized today, and the first day of voting is later this month, Virginia Public Radio's Michael Pope reports.
During a recent training event for Republican poll watchers in Arlington, Virginia Party Chairman Rich Anderson did not mince words about the 45 days of voting that starts Friday, September 20th.
Early voting in Virginia, which is way too early, but that's the law, and that's where we will operate.
Not everyone thinks it's way too early. Senator Aaron Rouse is chairman of the Senate committee overseeing election law. He says Republicans are being hypocritical.
It's just a strategy for them to be able to win an election, get into office, and once they're in office, revoke early voting days.
Some of the people urging their supporters to vote early now were trying to undermine the 45 days of early voting during the General Assembly session earlier this year, says House Privileges and Elections Committee Chairwoman Sia Price.
Trying to get power in order to roll back the tools that you used in order to win, it doesn't make sense to me.
For a while, Virginia had the longest early vote in the country, but now several other states have gotten into the act, and Pennsylvania will be the first state to begin early voting 4 days before Virginia. I'm Michael Pope.
The final stretch of the campaign season in Virginia got off to a raucous start. Jeff Shapiro, political columnist at the Richmond Times-Dispatch, joins Michael now to recap the week in politics and state government.
Labor Day was the official start of the campaign season, and Jeff Shapiro, I understand that things have already gotten off to a spirited beginning at a bipartisan political event in Buena Vista. What happened there?
This is a storied stop on Virginia's campaign trail, open to Democrats and Republicans. It's an opportunity for some retail politicking. When the governor, a Republican governor, Glenn Youngkin, spoke, the Democrats booed. That did not go over well with the Republicans in the audience. They cheered in behalf of the governor. A lot of the points that the governor was making, very much typical Republican talking points, including the concerns over the border. The lieutenant governor, a Republican, Winsome Earle Sears, the first Black woman elected statewide in Virginia, spoke as well. Democrats booed her, and Winsome Sears replied at the top of her voice, "Democrats are booing a Black woman." She said that several times and wondered, well, would they boo Kamala Harris, the woman of color whom Democrats have nominated for the presidency? Certainly a reminder that politics can be spirited, very lively in Virginia, but increasingly very personal.
So usually Democrats and Republicans are at their own event that's, you know, either filled with Democrats or filled with Republicans. This event in Buena Vista is a bipartisan sort of political rally, right? What's the tradition there?
Well, this used to be a Democratic area of the state, no longer. I think that's one of the reasons why reaction to the governor's remarks maybe was rather interesting. It's a pretty red region of Virginia, and certainly with this storied event, people will come in from out of town, and there may have been a good number of Democrats from, say, up and down the valley or beyond. The contrast could not have been more dramatic. You know, on the other side of the state, in Newport News, Doug Emhoff, the second gentleman, spoke at Bobby Scott's traditional Labor Day picnic, reinforcing the views among Democrats that this new ticket led by Kamala Harris will pretty much lock down Virginia in the fall.
So later this week, we are getting the ballot, the presidential ballot, locked down in terms of the names that will appear on the presidential ticket in Virginia. One Democrat, one Republican, one independent, one green, and one libertarian. Jeff Shapiro, how will this ticket influence the outcome in Virginia this year?
Well, the conventional wisdom seems to be within both parties that this is just going to be a two-party race here in Virginia. What I think is interesting is that as the Board of Elections was asked by Robert Kennedy Jr.'s campaign not to place his name on the Virginia ballot. Of course, Kennedy causing some distress, certainly within his storied family, over his endorsement of Donald Trump.
So we're continuing to see drama in the 5th Congressional District, where supporters of ousted incumbent Bob Good are trying to write his name on the ballot. Jeff Shapiro, is that going to work?
A lot of ill will in the very red 5th Congressional District. Of course, Bob Good denied renomination by John McGuire. Good, having already announced that he will challenge McGuire for the 2026 Republican nomination in VA 5. If there was ever a reminder of a lot of ill will lingering, and if not building following that rough and tumble primary, it's this promise by Good supporters to write in his name rather than support John McGuire, who is likely to be elected in that strongly Republican district by a landslide.
All right. That's all the time that we've got for this week, the start of campaign season in Virginia. My name is Michael Pope, and we've been joined by Jeff Shapiro of the Richmond Times-Dispatch. Talk to you next week.
Have a great weekend.
Earlier this year, a federal court dismissed charges against a black man who was stopped by police in Richmond after his lawyer showed proof of racial bias. Now, a Virginia nonprofit has used the same approach to analyze traffic stops by more than 100 other police departments. Virginia Public Radio's Sandy Houseman reports.
Most police departments in this state are too small to provide meaningful statistics on this subject. But the justice reform group Julian found good data for 107 communities and concluded the largest ones had the biggest problem.
The Virginia State Police actually stands out to be the agency that failed the most tests over time.
Chuck Mayer says Arlington was next, and Richmond ranked number 4 in disparities between the way white and black drivers were treated during a traffic stop.
If you were black and you were stopped by the Richmond Police Department in this time period, you were approximately 13 times as likely to get arrested than a white person if you were stopped for a traffic violation.
Lynchburg, Chesterfield County, and Roanoke also showed a much greater tendency to punish black drivers. Julian's report does show an improvement in some other places over the 39-month period surveyed.
Over time, the number of departments that fail these statistical tests of disparity have decreased.
He thinks that's because of a relatively new state law that limits reasons for traffic stops and because marijuana is now legal. Still, Mayer says we need more information to better understand the problem. He hopes the report proves useful to Virginia's attorney general, policy, and lawmakers. And he urges police departments to view this study as a starting point for exploring how to reduce racial disparities in traffic stops, tickets, searches, and arrests. I'm Sandy Houseman.
Arthritis drugs already available for prescription have the potential to halt lingering lung problems lasting months or years after COVID-19 infections. That's according to new research from the University of Virginia School of Medicine and Cedars-Sinai. The research shows that the drugs can disrupt the malfunctioning immune response in the lungs that some people experience after a COVID infection. The findings are published in the journal Nature. Virginia Tech's marching band will celebrate its 50th anniversary this weekend. Hundreds of alumni will join current band musicians to perform during Saturday's football game. Virginia Public Radio's Roxy Todd reports.
When the Marching Virginians played for the public the first time on September 28, 1974, the band was only 10 days old. Since then, they've performed at hundreds of halftime shows, including bowl games.
And actually, 50 years is pretty young for college marching bands of schools this size.
Polly Middleton is director of athletic bands at Virginia Tech.
So to see everything that this group has accomplished in a very short 50 years is pretty cool.
Virginia Tech has two other marching bands, including the Heidi Tidies, which is associated with the Corps of Cadets. That band was established in 1893. Their roles are slightly different, though some musicians play in both bands. The Marching Virginians are hosting several events this weekend. Along with current band members, hundreds of alumni will perform during Saturday's halftime show.
So it's fun for alumni to come back. They recognize what we're doing. They recognize the traditions. They recognize some of the music. And they get a chance to still feel engaged and feel part of this really special community.
During the Hokies' home game against Marshall University, they'll play some of the classic songs the Marching Virginians have performed over the years, including the Hokey Pokey. In Blacksburg, I'm Roxy Todd.
In 1942, Roanoke College closed out its football season with a 42-0 loss. That's also the last time the small liberal arts school in Salem would field a team as the country entered World War II. But that changes this Sunday when Roanoke College takes on Hampton-Sydney College for the Maroons' first game in 82 years. Virginia Public Radio's Jeff Bossert looks at what it's taken to restart a legacy.
A one-time history teacher, Roanoke College head football coach Brian Steinspring, understands there was a bigger cause when the country needed men to join the war effort. He says that won't be lost on this year's team.
And we need to honor that and respect that, and to the tune that we will have an individual that wears the jersey 42 each week. And that individual has done something that reflects what the team of 1942 was all about.
Steinspring was hired last fall to build the football program after the school raised $1.3 million.
In January, we had five players. We're now at 62, so we're in good shape. The biggest part for me is the young men that are here. Legacy is important to them. And there's only so many times in life you get a chance to start something and make it your own.
Steinspring is well known in the region with experience as an assistant coach at Virginia Tech, VMI, and JMU, among others. This fall, football is a club sport at Roanoke College with a five-game schedule. But the 2025 varsity season will bring a full schedule as Roanoke College joins the Old Dominion Athletic Conference, or ODAC, at the Division III level. The school's last football coach in that 1942 season was Buddy Hackman. Bud Pierce is his grandson.
When he was 65 years old, he was in as good a shape as he was when he was 20.
Hackman was part of Roanoke College athletics long after the decision to end football, retiring as athletic director in 1971. He died in 1987.
I remember in basketball camp, playing handball, playing tennis, swimming. They had to use proper technique. If they did that, then they'd be successful.
Pierce says he looks forward to sharing memories of his grandfather with the football team, with hopes of providing a little inspiration. Along with a commitment to football comes band and cheer team programs and a big boost to the Roanoke College student body.
Our goal for all three programs was 80 students, and we're at 130 in year one.
College president Frank Shushok.
So that says that the timing was right and the enthusiasm is high. This is truly the student athlete in Division III sports. And not only are we trying to launch great students out on the field, we're trying to build in them leadership capacity and character.
Roanoke College will be part of more sports competition next spring. Caitlin Kaminsky is head competition cheer coach.
Here at Roanoke, we just qualified for NCAA College Nationals. So we're going down to Daytona, Florida this year.
The National Cheerleaders Association competition is next April. Hired along with Kaminsky last year is Terrell Smith, the director of marching and spirit bands.
Everyone just immediately bought into, you know, what the program is going to represent, and the effort and the get into itness is my term. The get into itness has just been astounding. It's humbling.
The college spirit band will play for basketball games once the football season is over. Another job for Smith, creating a modern arrangement for Maroon Victory, a Roanoke College fight song originally composed in 1922, with plans to perform it for a football crowd later this season. This weekend halftime show will offer more contemporary tunes, a Michael Jackson medley. Roanoke College will play its games at Salem Stadium, longtime host to Division III football championships. Once again, head coach Brian Steinspring.
I want to walk into Salem City Stadium, and I want to walk on that field. I want to be a part of a team. I want to look up at the stands and see some people that are really excited about what's going on here.
Kickoff versus Hampton Sydney's JV team is Sunday at 2 p.m. I'm Jeff Bosser.
And finally today, Virginia is home to three of the top 10 cities to move to in the South, more than any other southern state, and that's according to a new ranking from USA Today Homefront. Roanoke, Lynchburg, and Richmond ranked in the top 10. The ranking is a boost for Virginia because the state's overall population has been basically flat for more than a decade, driven in part by transplants choosing to move to other southern states over Virginia. For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy your Friday.